Hello and welcome to the latest seminar from the Glasgow Centre for Population Health, supporting new approaches to improve health and tackle inequality. In this videocast, Sarah McKinley, Director of Community Wealth Building Programmes and Next System Project European Representative, the Democracy Collaborative USA, discusses the notion of community wealth building as health building, how a local democratic economy can create healthy, thriving communities. It was recorded via Zoom on the 14th of December, 2022.
My name is Sarah McKinley and I'm with the Democracy Collaborative. It is a true honor to be here with you. I know a number of folks who have presented in this seminar, including friends and allies like Dr. Catherine Trebek and others. I know that your group and a lot of folks in the Greater Glasgow region and across Scotland are doing really excellent work. And I really want to present some of these as learnings, provocations, and so forth, and really look forward to getting your feedback and questions and digging into it. I'll be talking about democratizing the economy and why that is important for health and well-being broadly, and how community wealth building in particular and taking a community wealth building approach to economic development can deliver a democratic economy of place. So I know, as Kevin said, you're already familiar with the term community wealth building. There's so much exciting work going on. What I hope to do here is really focus on the frame, focus on the transformative potential and promise of community wealth building, contextualize it in its history and things that have been going on, and then also bring it to bear on the ground in activity that's actually going on and the beginning of outcomes and outputs, really looking at community wealth building as a way of delivering on well-being economies of place. So how to actually create a well-being economy of place through a community wealth building approach. So just to start, a little bit about the Democracy Collaborative. As Kevin said, we are a US-based research and what we say a design lab for the democratic economy. So we work, we develop research and we work directly on policy, but also in consultation and advising with communities, institutions, and local governments in place on how to deliver, how to implement a community wealth building strategy that democratizes the local economy. We focus on developing ideas and vision of producing models to really show the art of the possible, to demonstrate that this is not just a theoretical idea, but in fact a reality and happening in communities and really delivering for people in place. So why do we talk about a democratic economy, and what does it mean? Why do we need to democratize the economy? We believe at the Democracy Collaborative that true human flourishing requires that people have to have control of their own economic futures. In addition to their social and environmental conditions, they need to be able to determine and meet their own needs through economic activity. And we believe that democracy, therefore, cannot just reside in the political realm, or especially as we see right now in our increasingly non-representative systems, but that we must also democratize and broaden ownership and control of our economy. This is no more clear than our extreme inequalities, extreme and growing inequality. And that's not just, I certainly speak of that as an American, where it really is quite the model of extreme wealth inequality, but this is now a global phenomenon. And it is certainly a problem in the UK and Europe and globally as well. As you see from this chart, and there's a fantastic resource online, it's called inequality.org, and it has lots of statistics about inequality and the impacts that it's having on people in everyday lives. Right now, As you can see, that in this moment of crisis, our inequality, our extreme inequality that was already very severe before 2020 is just growing. And in fact, those the wealthiest among us, the richest among us, have actually profited in the last few years, as we all know. And what we're seeing essentially is global plutocracy, right? We are seeing that the wealthy are concentrating their power increasingly and walling themselves off from the rest of society, and that the gap between them and the rest of us is growing as their wealth increases, ours decreases, as you see in wages stagnating and everything else. This is not a coincidence. This is, in fact, a result of the design of our economic system as it is. It is designed to extract resources from people and planet and concentrate the benefits of those resources in the hands of the few at the top. Of course, we've been told for 40 years or more that the benefits of that concentration of wealth, of that extraction of wealth, would trickle down to the rest of us. We're not seeing that happen. What we're seeing instead is, of course, the pernicious ill effects of this unequal system. And of course, one of the most staggering signs of that is the increasing gap of life expectancy between rich and poor. This, of course, is in America, although there are similar numbers for the UK and other industrialized nations as well. So this is certainly growing. I don't need to speak to you all. I don't need to talk to this audience about the social determinants of health, but it's not just that those at the top are able to capture institutions and the benefits of it for their own profit and for their own success and health, but it is also that things like poverty, things like economic insecurity are very clearly far more detrimental to people's health, to people's well-being than is physical health, than is clinical health and access to medicine and care. So things like job insecurity, stress, environmental pollution, all of those sorts of things impact people's lives and their health much more than access to clinical care. Of course, you all know that. The impacts of this inequality are not just physical or mental. Of course, those are very clear and stark, but there are many other tag-along impacts of inequality and how it affects our lives, right? So in addition to causing stress and anxiety and affecting people's mental health and well-being, it's also clearly causing instability, crisis, debt, inflation, the things that we're now seeing that are really compounding the crisis of climate change, the crisis of pandemic, all of these things are a result of the way the system has been designed and the inequalities therein. Of course, violent crime is an outcome of that, social instability, social unrest. In short, basically our inequality and our growing inequality is undermining our social contract and the fabric of our society. So it's no surprise that we are in this moment where we are seeing all these crises coming home to bear. And of course, you know, what one of the words of the year is permacrisis. So certainly this is not the end, right? We're in a moment where this is going to become the new normal, unfortunately. But what's fortunate is that it actually doesn't have to be that way. Positive health that produces positive well-being of place. The economy is something that we design, is something that we shape. It is not an exogenous force. In fact, as my colleague Neil McEnroy, who many of you know, I'm sure, reminds us often, the Greek root word for economy, economos, means of the household, of a rooted place. And we need to bring the economy back into service to place and to the people who live there. We need to make sure that the economy is rooted in place and not this tethered, financialized, disconnected black box that it has become in our current moment. So we can design this, we can build this. And that is what I'm going to be talking about today. And that is the context that I want to bring community wealth building into. We are talking about redirecting economic flows, redirecting wealth, the way we redirect and harness water through our pipes, right? This is economic plumbing. And we're talking about redesigning our economy so that it produces positive impacts through its natural functioning. So what I've been talking about today, this is the age-old question that is central to political economy, question that has been asked from Glaswegian Adam Smith to Karl Marx and everyone in between. And that is, who owns and controls assets and capital? Who owns and controls asset and capital determines the economy, right? It determines output. And so what we're talking about here is changing who owns and control those assets, right? Who benefits from the control of those assets, and ensuring that our assets, everything from land to labor, is broadly held by the community in place for the benefit of the people who live there, the people who create that wealth, and for the planet that we're living on. So what I'm talking about here, and I know you've heard it before, is pre-distribution, right? Designing this beforehand, not redistributing after the fact to even out the ill effects, to ameliorate the ill effects of the extractive system as it is designed now, instead redesigning it so that we don't have to do that. Yes, we do need to talk about redistribution at this moment to get us where we need to be, but we also need to be thinking about redistribution and designing our system so that it addresses wealth inequality and poverty at its core. So that brings me to community wealth building. So again, the goal is not to tinker around the edges, but to build a new economic system from place all the way up. So I know you're familiar with the term, but I want to emphasize that community wealth building is indeed an approach to economic development. It is a system-based approach to economic development that focuses on changing the ownership and control of assets in place so that the community benefits from and controls those assets directly. You've heard the term before. Where does it come from? Community wealth building is a terminology to refer to a number of activities, and I'll get into that in more detail. But a lot of those activities that we're talking about in a community wealth building frame are not new. These are activities that have existed in communities across the globe for as long as we've been living together collectively as humans, as a way to meet our needs. Cooperative economics, cooperative exchange, working together to steward and manage land and resources. But the modern community wealth building movement or term really grows out of movements from the Rochdale cooperators at the turn of the 19th century, all the way up to the civil rights movement in the US, to the cooperative and social solidarity economy movements in Italy and Spain, to Nyeri in Tanzania and the cooperative movements there. So these are strong traditions that are rooted in economic self-determination, economic liberation, usually driven by those communities that have been cut out of the benefits of our traditional economy. So Black and Brown communities in the US and elsewhere, indigenous communities in the global South, communities that have had their wealth extracted from them and are seeking to push back against that and to meet their own needs on their own terms. So it grows out of community wealth building, grows out of a rich tradition of economic self-determination and liberation. But what it does is it pulls this all together into a modern context and frame and looks at different aspects of our local economy and connects those different aspects so that they can be greater than the sum of its parts. We talk about the five different pillars of community wealth building. I'm sure you've heard them before. I'll just quickly go through them here. I know Scotland has its own version of the five pillars. There, CLESS, the Center for Local Economic Strategies, has its own version. We in the Democracy Collaborative have a version that we've adapted to a US context. And just to say, that is the goal. Community wealth building is centered in place, so it needs to be responsive to the realities and the context of those places. That said, these five pillars are universal. These are aspects of every local economy that we need to be considering when we're talking about institutions and activities of the economy that produce wealth, that produce value for the people living there. So we talk about progressive procurement. Of course, that's purchasing of goods and services in place. And I'll get on to anchor institutions in a little bit, which I know you know about, but of course, the role of large place-based institutions and how they purchase goods and services is key to a community wealth building approach, and ensuring that that spending power is directed to and benefiting localities. Same with the use of land and property, thinking about land ownership broadly, how to open up control and decision-making and use and productive value of land and property so that community is making those decisions, benefiting from it and getting their needs met through the use of that land, not just thinking about land as a financial asset to profit off of and to speculate against. Fair work is key. We're certainly seeing that right now in this moment of industrial action and response. Work is precarious. People are not able to live on what we used to think of as family supporting jobs, right? How can we connect all this economic activity in a way that is valuing labor and that is allowing people to have security in their jobs and control over their jobs and the future of their jobs? A huge part of a community wealth building approach, of course, is inclusive and democratic enterprise and ownership of enterprise, how to democratize ownership of enterprise. So thinking about different forms of plural ownership of enterprise in place. So that is cooperatives, that's a huge part of it. And of course, there are many different kinds of cooperatives, consumer cooperatives, employee-owned cooperatives, and so forth, but also social enterprise, municipal enterprise, thinking about public ownership in more democratic forms. How can we democratize our public enterprises in a way that communities and people see themselves in the response to those services that they're receiving and so forth? It's a key part of our economy and a central focus of community wealth building. And finally, locally rooted finance. All of the investment that comes into our communities, how are we ensuring that that investment is staying in those communities through community-based institutions like community development financial institutions, credit unions, public banking, community banking, things of that nature. And then thinking about all of our public investments, like our pension funds, for example, and how they can go into meeting the needs of people in place, meeting the needs of community and doing double time, if you will, especially in these moments of crises, right? So everywhere you look, you'll see community wealth building like activity. You'll see cooperatives in almost every community, community land trusts, credit unions I just mentioned, all forms of informal and formal ways of coming together in a collective spirit to meet our local economic needs. You'll see it everywhere, right? And that's what's so exciting about community wealth building, is that so much of this activity already exists in your communities. But the question is, how does it come together in a way that all of these activities are greater than the sum of their parts, so that it's not just a single cooperative here operating without finance, without direct investment or purchasing from them, without the labor markets and the capacity development that needs to happen to support them. So instead of these things existing in isolation, a community wealth building model connects them and brings them all together. A key part of doing this, as I mentioned, and as you already know, are anchor institutions, large public and nonprofit institutions that are rooted in place and have a mission to serve, right? They have to deliver good health. They have to deliver education. They have to meet the needs of people in place, not profit, right? They are there to serve us and have a mission to deliver. So, again, I did mention that these are public and nonprofit institutions. I'm not talking actually about private institutions. Part of that is because the ownership model does not incentivize them to actually serve. A private institutional model usually has a profit motive. And that is something we do need to change. But for the sake of a community wealth building model, what we're talking about are public and nonprofit institutions. And of course, these are large employers, they're large spenders, they're large investors, and they're large asset holders in place. In many communities, they are the largest asset owners and the largest employers in place. So really thinking about how that economic input, these are economic engines, in addition to what they have to deliver, they are also economic engines, and thinking about the totality of their economic impact to actually also meet their mission. So for example, in the case of the NHS, what we call the mother of all anchor institutions, right? The mission is health, right? Is to provide healthcare to community and to people in place. And thinking about health more broadly, we also need to think of the upstream causes of good health or bad health, and really think about the institution's impact in creating that and how to change that, right? So how can the NHS and other institutions like it really be investing, purchasing, hiring in a way that creates good health in place? And of course, this is already happening in Scotland. It's already happening in a number of communities. I put on here an example from North Ayrshire, where they have an anchor charter mission that their anchor institutions have signed on to. So again, these are all excellent activities. These are all excellent endeavors. But what community wealth building adds to this is not just the singular project or the singular initiative, although you do have to start somewhere. It's the connectivity. It's the connective tissue, the enabling infrastructure, if you will, or the ecosystem of support that wraps around all of these activities and, again, makes them stronger than the sum of their parts. So that is the policy, the resource, the capacity building, the exchange, the community essentially around this. And that's what community wealth building offers, is connecting all of these elements in a more powerful way so that they can indeed begin to disrupt and displace an extractive economy in place. So that this we spent a lot of time drawing prisms and all sorts of things to try and capture this, you know, this disruptive capacity for community wealth building to really begin to lay the groundwork for the kind of economy that we need to see, not just locally, but in our countries and globally as well, the kind of regenerative economy that enables thriving and good health and well-being in place. And so community wealth building is the way to do that, to connect that tissue at the local level through ownership of institutions, through redesigning the economy of place. So a few examples. Many of these you already know. Again, many of these are already happening in Scotland. And in fact, in many ways, Scotland is ahead of the game in many places. But all of these endeavors are fairly early stages in terms of an intentional, interconnected strategy to address these. I'll start with the Evergreen Cooperatives in Cleveland, Ohio. You may have heard of the Evergreen Cooperatives. The Democracy Collaborative was part of an endeavor there called the Greater University Circle Initiative that came together with all the large institutions in Cleveland to really ask the question of how is it that the large institutions in the downtown core of Cleveland, places like the Cleveland Clinic, University Hospitals, Case Western University, some of the largest and most prosperous or successful institutions in that, and not just in Cleveland, but in that in Ohio and that region of the US, a largely post-industrial region that has suffered from a fair amount of deindustrialization, disinvestment, and population loss in the post-war period. So those institutions came together and asked the question, how is it that we have been able to prosper while there's all this urban decline, urban disinvestment, and in particular, high rates of poverty in African-American communities just adjacent to these institutions. So looking very, very targetedly at these communities and asking, how is it that our success as institutions is not at all linked to these communities? How is it that there's a huge disconnect and what can we do about that? So the Democracy Collaborative worked with this group of institutions, bringing in community actors, bringing in community activists, community groups, job training programs, things of that nature that existed to look at the full ecosystem in place and ask, what can we do about this? What's missing? What's missing in the local economy? And what we realized in Cleveland, and what happens everywhere, is that most of these institutions have outsourced a lot of their purchasing, a lot of their hiring, a lot of their investment, and all these other activities that we just spoke about to large corporations, to multinationals, to groups that are looking to profit and to grow shareholder wealth. So how could we break that cycle? How could we move away from that practice and look at how the economic impacts or economic activities of these communities can instead benefit those disinvested, disenfranchised Black and Brown communities nearby? And so we did a gap analysis of the whole economy, what was lacking in the economy, and what could we begin to provide locally? What could the local community begin to provide in terms of goods and services, and what that would look like in terms of use of land and investment and recirculation of wealth? And so we developed a network of employee-owned cooperatives that provide goods and services directly to the institutions in place and hire, train, and ultimately are owned by community residents in those communities. And this is about 10 years ago. This is where we coined the term community wealth building, because we were looking at all these aspects of the local economy, the land, the enterprise ownership, the local investment, the hiring practices, and all this. And that is how we came to the term community wealth building and connecting these together in this networked employee-owned cooperative system. So now there are roughly five cooperatives in the system. They employ together over 400 individuals. Most of those individuals come from the communities I mentioned before. Most are ex-offenders who are unable to be employed in other systems. And of course, as we all know, the carceral state in the US is highly problematic and highly racialized, and produces huge issues for people in seeking employment and being able to support themselves and be productive within their communities. So that has had a huge impact. They are owners, they share profit in these companies. The companies are now all profitable. In addition to sharing profit with the employees, they've created revolving loan funds that then go back into the community. There is a fund for employee ownership, for example, that actually works to purchase SMEs, small, medium enterprises in the community that are going out of business, and convert them to employee ownership so that they stay in the communities and so that the employees can directly benefit from those enterprises. And I will say, just, I think it was 2 years ago now, 3 years, but before the pandemic, the University Hospital, one of the largest hospitals in the area, finally was up with they had a contract with Sodexo, a 20-year contract with Sodexo, which was finally up, and they put it out to bid, and the Evergreen Cooperative Laundries won that full bid. And what they were able to do by winning that bid is that they were able to actually purchase the Sodexo plant, keep all of the Sodexo employees, convert them to employee owners, and convert the whole industrial laundry to a green, full wastewater reuse, gray water facility. And again, not a single job was lost in that. And they were able to grow the cooperatives. So you're beginning to see a sense of scale. You're beginning to see a local economic system that presents an alternative. We've seen this applied. We've seen these ideas come to roost now on this side of the pond. You've likely heard of the Preston model in Preston in England in about 2013, after a huge downtown development project that was dependent on a multinational developer had fallen apart. They were wondering how they can really start to redevelop Preston and really change the direction of their local economy, even in the face of austerity, even in the face of all the sort of ill social effects that they were dealing with as a result of years of industrial decline and disinvestment and austerity. And so they intentionally took up, learning from Cleveland and what happened there, a community wealth building strategy to really look at how they could redirect their spending, redirect their local economic flows in a way that roots it locally to the benefit of the people there. They've managed in that time to redirect more than £70 million for the city, £200 million for the regional economy locally, creating jobs and increased wages, along with a number of other activities around this. This model has, unlike in Cleveland, which was driven by the institutional actors and community-based organizations, this model in Preston was initially driven by local government. They've now really built up their community organizing and community development ends of this and bringing the community to bear in this. But what's really interesting was what they were able to do as a local government with their own purchasing, with their own hiring, with their own land and asset use. And they've been able to do things like use pension investment to build social housing for the first time in 30 years, for example. So looking at the local government as not just an anchor institution, but a driver of change. And then, of course, you're seeing this really catch on here in Scotland. And of course, North Ayrshire is Scotland's first community wealth building authority, and they've now been on this journey for about 2 years. They've done a huge amount of work to really build an institutional framework around community wealth building to really ensure that community wealth building is part of the way that their local authority thinks about economic development and does economic development. It's still fairly early stages, but you're starting to see progress come out of it. For example, the latest is two previous municipal landfills are being used for solar photovoltaic farms, and they're developing that as a municipal owned enterprise that will then put money back into the grid and use that surplus to capitalize a fund for cooperative ownership and cooperative development in place. So this is very early stages, but you're starting to see results of it and from it. And so to that end, and tying it back to sort of the what I was earlier talking about sort of the ill effects of inequality. So, and of course, our theory is that by redesigning the economy, by democratizing the economy, we will not only reduce those ill effects, we will ameliorate, we will end them, right? We will create positive benefit rather than negative consequence. And so how can we prove that, right? We believe this to be true. This is our theory of change. There's plenty of stories about this narrative, qualitative analysis on this, but there hasn't yet heretofore been a lot of quantitative analysis of this. So we're really working on developing evaluation frameworks and metrics that can start to really track change over time and show the actual positive outcomes of taking this kind of a pre-distributive approach to local economic development. Preston is now participating in the beginning, it's very early stages of a longitudinal multi-year study of some of the impacts of their community wealth building approach to health and to well-being. And so they've just released their first report, and they've been able to show, and I'll say, of course, I am not a scientist, so I'm not even going to try and use the jargon appropriately. But you know, they have been able to show correlation, not causality. Of course, it's very difficult to show direct causality because there are so many variables in this, but strong correlation between a community wealth building approach and improvements in mental health outcomes, improvements in life satisfaction, and improvements in wage and employment stability. So again, very early stages, but we're starting to see positive outcome from these approaches, from taking these approaches to rebuilding, redesigning our local economies so that they produce positive outcome by their natural functioning. We want to do more of this. We need more of this. We need to make the case. And we know that this works in people's lives, and we need to sell that also beyond, because we can't just do this in isolation. We have to do this together. So as I said, this is a growing movement. It's not isolated. These activities are happening in community and place. They may not be calling themselves community wealth building, but how do we connect all of this activity in a powerful, linked up, resourced way so that that these efforts are really starting to displace our extractive economy, are really starting to show the way to a different way of doing business, a different way of being. We call these the laboratories of democracy. And I'm also not a very tech savvy person. So this was my attempt at a rough mapping of all the various places I know of that are articulating intentional community wealth building strategy. So I've dropped some pins on maps just to give us a sense of how this is taking off. I mean, look at the UK alone. There's a big grouping here in Scotland. I'm sure I'm missing some things, but you know, you're not alone. Even though I know how difficult it is to do this work in place, and it's baby steps, and we're putting the wings on the plane as we're flying, we're all in it together. And our role at the Democracy Collaborative is to make those connections, to knit these efforts together globally, to make sure that we aren't in isolation as this movement, and it really is a movement to change the way our economies work so that they produce well-being, so that they are truly thriving and sustainable places for us to live, even in the face of climate collapse.